take the risks, try something new, believe in yourself, even if you don't have the proper training or piece of paper that says that you can do something, believe in yourself, make it happen, because you could be $80 in a foot-long sandwich away from not having to worry about it anymore.
I'm Sean Cheatham, Chief Commercial Officer at Hayes Technology, and this is our podcast called How Did You Get That Job? That explores the secrets behind career success in the tech industry. In this episode, we meet Aaron Goolsby, who is the Global Head of Play Partnerships for Game Partnerships and Operations at Facebook. We'll be discussing how Aaron had a near-fatal incident making sandwiches, which inspired him to have the most remarkable career in gaming. He'll share his thoughts on what the wider tech industry can learn from gaming and how it will evolve in the coming years. So, Aaron, I know you have an interesting story on how you got into the tech industry. Why don't you share that with our listeners?
Sure. You know, I started at Subway Sandwiches as a professional Subway artist, trying to make my way through college. I was in my sophomore year making sandwiches for people paying tuition. And, you know, a pivotal moment occurred, you know, at a fairly young age for me. I was in my early 20s thinking, you know, college was the way to figure out what I needed to do. It's a very expensive way to do that. And trying to pay your own way, you take these types of jobs and you think they're relatively safe. Well, I was wrong about that. You know, at Subway, I was a victim of armed robbery 3 different times in the span of about 4 months. And it started at the early part of 1997, and there were shots fired, and my friend and I, we survived. We weren't hit, but for $80, it makes you kind of think about what you're doing with your life and why am I putting myself in such harm's way when I haven't even figured out what it is I want to do. And so in the span of trying to figure out what I was going to do that didn't involve being robbed for Subway sandwich money, I decided to fan out a little bit into the local area and discovered that a small company that had invented trading card games, Wizards of the Coast, was hiring and trying to open their very first retail store. So they were investing in site-based entertainment at a time when it was pretty fashionable. You think of GameWorks and that phase of the world. This was right at the start of that. And so I applied and got a job, you know, working on games. And immediately that job was to run the BattleTech simulation pods. It's like a nerd's dream, you know, being able to work on these pods and have customers come in and pay $5 a pop to sit inside this immersive pod and run around in 2-story giant mechanized armored tanks, basically fighting each other, was an amazing job. And what it did is it got me excited about how technology and experiential entertainment could merge together and bring people from all 4 quadrants to be able to enjoy games in a way that, you know, I had always dreamed of when I was a kid, and finally got to see up close and personal how to make that possible. And I guess that was the start of the journey for me for technology. You know, I didn't pay that well, but I will say that it definitely kept me out of gunfire, at least the real version of gunfire, and instead gave me an opportunity to really understand the type of joy and entertainment that could be had from technology.
So from that point forward, why don't you give our audience a little bit of understanding of your career to date?
I had that gig at Wizards of the Coast, and I sort of worked through the retail versions of that business and some of their investments and, frankly, divestments in the retail experience. I eventually joined the e-commerce team in its infancy, right at the height of the Pokemon craze, which Wizards of the Coast was the inventor of the Pokemon trading card game, and they did it under a license for Nintendo. And that was wildly successful, both online and in our retail stores at the time. And so I started gaining a lot of e-commerce experience. Little known fact at that time as well, Wizards did a deal with Lucasfilm to do some Star Wars trading card games and role-playing games. And along inside that deal was that we would run the Star Wars fan club. And so again, sort of from serendipity, I got to work on the Star Wars fan club for a couple of years. We ran that online version of it. And I got to tell you, that was pretty much a dream come true as well. I mean, there is a picture somewhere of me very young wearing a Return of the Jedi jacket that my family definitely reminds me of a lot, you know, and it looked pretty nerdy, a couple big teeth, maybe a couple missing teeth, you know, wearing a Star Wars jacket. And so being able to work on the Star Wars fan club and work with Lucasfilm to do some pretty amazing toys and promotions and to meet fans. I went to Star Wars Celebration, did some stuff there. So again, here's technology, you know, in my career path, and it's sort of a means to this end of really sort of enabling digital game experiences, you know, the notion that we can sell this type of entertainment and it's a win-win for both the people who are enjoying it and for us who are organizing and manufacturing it. It just became very interesting to me. But I did decide during that same time period that I needed to go back to college. So I left college because it seemed like it wasn't really getting me anywhere except potentially killed. I worked for a while on games and technology and really started to get an understanding of how exciting this was for me. And so I went back and got a Bachelor of Science degree in information systems. Surprisingly, I just kept getting put on projects and roles that helped gifted people that could develop amazing code and technology for the Wizards business. And I stuck with Wizards through the Hasbro acquisition and well into the years of very good success for Wizards underneath Hasbro as we tried to scale that business and do some pretty amazing things. You know, the last 5 years of my time at Wizards, I spent as the VP of technology, responsible for all of the technology from the infrastructure, storage, network, and compute all the way to the development of a publishing platform, even leading some of the games. And through those experiences, 11 jobs, 9 bosses, what an amazing experience for me. I learned a ton. And I dabbled in business, I dabbled in marketing, you know, eventually settling on technology. The thing that I would say is the overriding theme through that whole experience for me was to take the risks, to try something new, to believe in yourself, even if you don't have the proper training or piece of paper that says that you can do something, believe in yourself, make it happen, because you could be $80 in a footlong sandwich away from not having to worry about it anymore.
What's the coolest part about being in the gaming business?
Well, it's being in the gaming business. We work on bringing fun to people. You know, in the games business, we power entertainment experiences. That's what we do. And they're interactive entertainment experiences in a way that is, I think, even more fulfilling than working in 2D space or in other types of the entertainment business where there's less interactivity. I just think that games are an excellent way to bring people together through a shared love that they would never have encountered had games not existed. I have met so many of my friends. I'd say 75, 80% of my actual friends I have met through interacting because of our love of games. And I probably have never even personally met 20% of them in real life. But I feel like I know them like they're family. And so for me, that's been one of the best parts about working in the games business was the connection, the ability to create entertaining experiences that bring people together.
From the different organizations that you've worked for, has there been any similarities or consistencies that you've noticed in how they develop games or the tech industry itself in those organizations?
You know, the passion is what powers the ability for a team to reach and find the fun in a game. It's amazing when you see it, and you definitely know it when you see it, but it's hard to predict. That's definitely true in every place that I've worked. It's very hard to predict when that fun will be found and how much energy and effort needs to be poured into it before you find it. It's also about the team and the people. It's very much about the team that you assemble and sort of resource and then give the ability to go after a theme and check in with them enough to make sure that they're making progress on that. Progress that they're happy with, not just progress that you're happy with. Without that, technology really doesn't matter, to be perfectly candid. It does help you get to market once you find the fun, but really it's about finding the core loops in the development process that delivers that awesome and entertaining and rewarding experience for a large group of potential players out there. That's the secret sauce. And it's not a secret insight that I'm bringing, but I would say that it's definitely something I've encountered just about everywhere I've worked.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because when we talk to people in the gaming industry from a staffing perspective, they're very passionate and very committed to the product that they're producing at that time, for sure.
Yeah, they have to enjoy it. They have to understand it. It has to be a part of their DNA. When you play a really good game, it is a collection of the DNA, the essence of the team that built it. I mean, it is truly that involved, especially a game that is tailored towards a lifestyle entertainment offering, one that people will come back to and play for hundreds of hours, or if not thousands of hours, one that they dedicate a significant portion of their time, energy, and resources to playing and engaging with the people that they meet. That is born out of the team that produced it. And in some cases, that's hundreds of people over many years. You can imagine if you're going to build something that is of the essence of how much passion must be present in order for that to come to fruition in a successful way. The downside is you can see that in a game that isn't fun as well. You can see that it's because there wasn't the necessary passion usually, and there wasn't the necessary resourcing, and the team wasn't able to come together in order to make that possible. But it is a little bit of magic, that's for sure.
You've been the VP of technology, head of platform, now global head of play. What has being a leader taught you about yourself?
Oh, humility in great amounts. You know, I think from a leadership perspective, one of the most valuable lessons I've learned in all the mistakes that I've made has been I desperately need to build a trusting tribal team around me to help illuminate my blind spots. That is the most important lesson that I've learned myself, is that I don't know what I don't know. And it's hard to pay attention to everything. And it's hard to have an accurate 360-degree view of yourself. No leader is better served than by having a team around them that can help illuminate the things that they do not see or may even ignore. That is definitely part of the humility that I was describing. You know, please call me out. It's sort of one of the key principles that I try to install in any team that I work on.
Certainly the gaming industry provides users with an experience, and it's basically around the clock, day and night. You have all this on your shoulders to make sure that this stuff is working and up and running for your audience 24/7.
You know, there's a couple of categories of folks, I think, that work on games. There's those that build, like I said, with the passion and essence to enable the great entertainment experiences for that game. But there's also a bunch of us that work on all the games that are on our platform. And what we care about and the passion that we put in is making sure that those systems and services are flawlessly running. A lot of the positive reinforcement I get is not for everyone. And that is, no news is good news in my business. Making sure that when we operate our platform, that it is seamless and that the platform is basically out of the way of the fun, so that players can get right into their game and have an amazing experience, meet their friends, interact with each other, and really not know how the sausage is made behind the scenes. They don't need to worry themselves with how we're trying to balance our infrastructure or how we're trying to make sure that our services horizontally scale, or, you know, why is that single database still a single database? You know, like, we just don't want them to have any visibility into that. So that pressure that you ask me about, that's actually part of the positive reinforcement that platform technologists get. We love that pressure because it tells us that the work we're doing matters.
Let's focus on your position at Facebook. Can you share with our listeners more about your role as the global head of play?
I'm only a few weeks in, but I will say that, you know, one of the driving reasons why I joined was, you know, similar reasons just kind of guided me along this platform technologist path, which is I just want to take the technology that I work on and sort of amplify its effect by introducing it to more and more players or potential players out there who can use this technology and have great game experiences with it. And so, you know, I'm kind of evaluating my own career aspirations. I kind of look around and say, you know, Facebook, that's pretty much the largest platform of people in the world, maybe the largest platform in history of mankind. If I'm looking for a pretty big challenge to try to bring to that giant platform the entertainment experiences from games, then I think I like that. I think that sounds pretty good to me. So took the opportunity. It was very unexpected, but decided to jump straight into the deep end. The passion that I've seen inside the company is unexpected and a first for me. Like, I've never met such a large number of people with such good intentions and positive energy in my career. I've worked with some pretty darn good teams in the past as well. So I'm happy to be there to help try to build my corner of the metaverse. And it seems like that dream is really coming true now.
And I know it's early in the role, but maybe give our listeners an understanding of what a typical day for you looks like.
Well, so far, it's a lot of training videos.
Those are so much fun, too.
Yeah, there's workplace safety. They have high-quality training videos here. I will say that. Like, really well put together training videos. Very compelling. In all seriousness, we have teams around the world. So my typical day, I'm in the Pacific Coast time zone, but I have teams in Europe and in Asia. And so, you know, there isn't much of a typical day that I could really describe right now. Still kind of trying to master my own calendar. But one of the things that I've noticed is that this place never sleeps. It's on all the time. And they have a very interesting way of managing work-life balance, which I've come to appreciate. Very respectful, open meetings by making sure that they understand who's in which time zone. And that's been very good. I'm a big fan of the 30-minute meetings. So this is just my own preference. And I'm carrying that forward into my new role for sure. Like, please, no hour-long meetings. They really only need to be 38 minutes. At most, I think we can cram that into 29 and give ourselves an extra minute back. So I'm big on the 30-minute meetings. So we're definitely doing that. You know, I'll probably have 10, maybe 12 30-minute meetings in a day. It's a lot, but as a leader, you know, that's my job. My job is to make sure that everybody is on the bus and the bus is going in the right direction. I don't really care where people sit on the bus, by the way. Like, we move people around all the time because we hired them not for the seat that they're going to sit in. We hired them for their attitude. We hired them for their passion, for their skill. And so, you know, they're moving around on the bus quite a bit. I'm just trying to make sure that it's going in the right direction and we're all still on it. And so having a lot of meetings every day is one way to do that. Trying to keep the organization flat as possible is also the reason why meeting volumes are pretty high, but short and frequent. That helps keep the organization flat. It helps us remain nimble. It helps us operate inside of shared context. Information doesn't age very well, even with great technology. So there's a lot of good touch points to try to keep things moving. There's a lot of strategy involved in my current role, a lot of discussion about the future plans of the organization and how they apply to my role and how they apply to my team. That's pretty standard. I mean, I think in any executive position, you're going to have that. But it's interesting to get to know a new company and how they do it and how they approach it. And I tried to inject some of my own style into that, even as a noob. You know, it's still a work in progress for me.
Outside of getting through the training videos and the 24/7 environment, I mean, what challenges do you think you'll have to overcome in the new role?
Well, it's a very large organization. So developing relationships is a very important part of getting anything done in a large organization. And so the 30, 60, 90-day plan that I put together for myself will include an amazing amount of listening, hopefully, and relying on my new team to help me with my blind spots because they're very large right now in the new job. And if I can do that, then I think what'll happen is relationships will start to form with cross-functional partners around that organization, and then we can really start to get to work. You know, I'm very hopeful that I stop being a burden to the organization as I onboard and can really start pulling my own weight as a leader and as a contributor.
And I'm just curious, how do you stay up to date on the latest innovations?
I play games. You know, I think that one of the things that anyone should consider when trying to figure out how to stay up to date in their particular area is they have to decide what kind of learner they are. One of the things that I observed about myself is that I'm much more of a kinetic style learner. Like, I got to do it. Like, maybe it's from my childhood, you know, burning my hands on the stove was sort of the best way to teach me that the stove was hot. You could tell me all day long. I could read about it. I could watch it on TV. And it would never sink in until I actually screwed up and did it myself. So that's what I mean by learning and developing your learning style. And then matching that to a way to stay on top of the area of business that excites you, that's part of your career. And for me, it's about understanding how the games industry is evolving and how players are evolving and how cohorts of players and personas for players change over time and change over generations. Paying attention to how game development is occurring and going to market. You don't have to have any special insight into it. Just knowing how games are changing as they launch into the market, understanding the differences in gameplay and the differences in how players are spending time and energy engaging in those is probably the best way. And so as a kinetic learner, I play a lot of games, you know, and I go back to old games as well. That's not professional. That's just my own personal thing. But it also allows me to have a nice delta, a nice contrast between what I did consider to be a AAA experience for myself and what is a AAA experience now, which then can help plot a point in time about where it might be going. Now working for Facebook, I mean, Oculus is a part of Facebook. You know, and VR has been sort of in the games radar for 15 years, probably Ready Player One. I mean, everybody has been talking about this immersive experience, and it's almost always in the form of this, what looks to be like a toilet seat on your head. And, you know, they've been getting lighter and lighter all the time. I say it like that because I did a stint in marketing, and I'm like, it just doesn't look cool yet. It needs to look cool as well as be cool. So it still looks like a toilet seat. But the experiences and the connectivity between those experiences when you're wearing the toilet seat and when you're not is increasing. You can kind of see the through line on that. If you play games and you can kind of see, well, how can this experience that I love right now, what's it going to be like if that toilet seat starts to look really cool again? You know, and that experience can come with me. And it's easy for me to have such an immersive experience right in my own home. What kind of experience would I be looking for? How would I want to connect with it? What types of interactions could I have with my friends who live far away that I haven't been able to play games with in a long time? That's how I try to stay abreast of that technology. And of course, there's another component to it, which is adjacent technologies. Oftentimes, I don't actually hire people from games. You know, maybe 50% of the time we hire people from the games industry, the other 50% we hire from outside the games industry. And that's one additional way of staying abreast of technology trends. When we work on platforms that power games for hundreds of millions, if not billions of players, we look to adjacent industries, you know, like the travel industry, like Ticketmaster or Expedia or, you know, Amazon from a strictly services perspective. I mean, there's just so many other industries out there that build world-class platforms that are always on, and they've innovated on that technology quite a bit. And in some cases, they turn around and sell it as well. You know, they create their commercial grade capabilities and turn around and sell it. And I think that's another way that we stay abreast of how technology is changing around us.
Well, I think it's determined that you have the coolest job ever, because part of your job description is to play games.
Well, yeah, I don't actually think that's true, but it is definitely the way I approach my job.
Exactly. Is there anything about the gaming industry that could teach the wider tech industry?
You know, that's very interesting. I think so. I think the marriage of what can be built and what should be built has shown to be a very effective part of developing great games, because of the time to market principle that is constantly being fought for, maybe against, I don't know, depends on who you are, but fought for in delivering games. I think a lot of companies operate on an MVP or a rubric by which they get something out and then they test the heck out of it with their customers. Whereas in the games business, like some of the best game developers out there really want to make sure that they have found a complete experience that is fun, that has been tested before revealing it. The nuance there and the difference there is the secret sauce, I think, for the games business. Those that get it right, they get it done, they fight to make it clockwork, and they deliver great game experiences that way. A lot of technology companies will launch something and it's just garbage. And you wonder why. And it's like, well, it's MVP and we wanted to get it out there and get feedback. But you may have damaged your customer base as a result of that. And so I think the games business has figured that out. I'm not saying that all game companies have figured that out, but definitely the ones that we would deem to be successful have figured that out. They deliver high quality experiences when they're ready. And hopefully that's within the time frame that they need to for business viability. But they release it in such a way that their customers love it, and they love them for it, and they reward them for it.
Let's talk about the future a little bit. How do you think your role as a global head of play at Facebook is going to change and develop in the coming years? I know it's early on, but let's look to the future a little bit.
Well, you know, I work in the partnership side of the business, so there's a lot of global heads of play at Facebook. I'll say that my role is still sort of one that I'm learning myself and how it will evolve into the future. I hope that I can make meaningful impact on the creation of the metaverse, at least from the game corner. Everybody's read, hopefully, about some of the visions that Mark Zuckerberg and others have had about the metaverse. But, you know, my version of the metaverse is one where games play a very important role in the enjoyment and interactivity and community development and community building in this new world. You know, I look across the industry at others that share a similar view, like Epic Games, for example, and Tim Sweeney talks a lot about his version of the metaverse. I think everybody can agree that it's coming. And so for me, I hope my role evolves and changes into the ability to deliver that from this corner.
For those listening right now, I mean, what advice would you give to someone who wants to work in the gaming industry and have success like you've had?
I would say have confidence in yourself and put yourself out there. It's not a painless process, and a lot of it's attributed to luck. But one of the things that my grandfather told me was luck is just opportunity times preparedness. You don't always control the opportunity, but you do control the amount of preparedness that you put into preparing yourself to receive that opportunity, should it come. I also think my dad told me once that finding opportunity out there is like holding up a golf club in a lightning storm. And that's what I mean by it not being painless. You know, there is a part of it that is risky. You could get electrocuted, I guess, is sort of the moral of my story. But once you do find that opportunity, dive into it. We're only one gunshot and a 12-inch stub away from not being able to live that dream. So take it for all it's worth.
There's a shortage of talent in the tech industry. Trying to get people to say, hey, this is a career I want for myself. I mean, how do we get people with non-traditional backgrounds to consider working in tech?
It's a very interesting question. I'm not sure I have the right answer for it. I'll say that the outreach that we try to do in the tech industry, which needs greater levels of diversity and equality and inclusion in it, I would say that we're constantly looking to expand the funnel for those that have the interest, not just the experience or the skill, but the interest in learning along the way and being open to receiving those people that would love to make that kind of a change, but are afraid to put themselves out there because they think they don't have the traditional background or the skills or experience or that it's hyper-competitive. I'd say to everybody listening that there are some of us that would welcome people to put themselves out there and say they're willing to learn. You'll find that there's many leaders in the tech industry that are willing to teach, willing to give people the opportunity to learn. So that's one way to hold the door open for more people, for sure.
And finally, Aaron, what are your long-term personal aims for your career?
I love making games, and my kids love that I love making games. And so those are very powerful aspirations for me. Maybe I'm a little simple in that respect, but as long as I have meaningful work with great people and I feel like I'm making a difference and I'm helping usher in the next future evolution of the games business, that's all I need. I still eat at Subway too.
Well, wait a minute. I said that was finally the last question, but I got one more. Are you any good at games?
Well, let's see. You're testing my humility now. I'll say I'm doing pretty well in Beat Saber, but I'm doing that more for my health. I play a heck of a lot of Destiny 2, and I think I'm really good at having fun with my fire team. I'm not a competitive gamer. I show up, want to play with my friends most of the time, you know, challenge myself. I go back and play the oldies, like I'm playing Civ 6 again, you know, I play Fallout 4 again, you know, these are games that are 5 years old or whatever. I'm just loving it. So I'm good at playing the games a lot.
That's great. Aaron, that's fantastic.
Thank you.
That was Aaron Goolsbee, Global Head of Play Partnerships for Game Partnerships and Operations at Facebook. My thoughts on the conversation with Aaron, you know, he took a very traumatic experience and used it as a motivation to find his identity, which led him to the gaming industry and then ultimately technology, which again highlights that you don't need a technical background to eventually have success in tech. He also talks about the gaming industry and how passionate people are about the products they are developing. And his advice to the broader tech industry was to find that passion because then ultimately you bring fun to people. Join us for our next episode where we'll be speaking with Dan Shapiro, the Chief Operating Officer at LinkedIn.
At the heart of technology, if you look at great technical organizations, are people that love technology, that just want to build great things. And so if you start with that premise and say, what can I do to create an environment that fosters that? I think that's going to naturally attract great people.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Sean Cheatham, Chief Commercial Officer at Hayes Technology. And you've been listening to How Did You Get That Job? To find out more about Hayes Technology, visit our website at hayestechnology.com and hit follow at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.